The Braves take 2 of 3 in South Florida in dramatic fashion as a ninth inning comeback exemplifies what this team has become. Marcell Ozuna, a 3-run jack to give the Braves the go-ahead runs over the Marlins. They win the series 2-1 over the Fish, and they move on to Houston, a place that is near and dear to everybody's heart, the same building, the same field that they won the 2021 World Series. From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this is the Braves Report presented by Kroger, the podcast that takes you inside the clubhouse and gives you the stories behind the score. I'm Barrett Salee, hanging out in the heart of Braves country, and it is a Braves country that is thrilled because what happened on Sunday, it seemed like Charlie Morton was in control. It seemed like the Braves were in control. And then before you knew it, the Marlins had a lead. The Marlins looked like they were going on to win the series. The Braves looked like they were about to suffer one of those sleepy series losses that we've seen happen a few times over the course of, especially early in the season for multiple seasons. But as is the case with this team, they never stop fighting. They never stop clawing. And it is the big bear, Marcell Ozuna, with the 3-run jack when the Braves were down to their final strike. It just gets over the wall, just gets over the extended arm of Jazz Chisholm. And they go to Houston with a ton of momentum. And you look at what this game was. Marcell Ozuna, another monster day. 3 of 5. With the home run and 4 RBI. Matt Olson coming through as well, 3 for 4 with a RBI. And Adam Duvall, sac fly and then a bomb in his first 2 at-bats of the game. He's platooning with Jared Kelnick, seems to be doing just fine. Platooning with Jared Kelnick, his average up to 250 right now. Certainly not where it should be, certainly not where it's going to end up though, because Duvall is getting hot at the right time. Let's explore a world of cooking with Kroger Chef Jr. Join us at a local Kroger where the Kroger chefs will teach your kids how to make fun and tasty recipes. Saturday, April 20th, your kids can learn how to make a festive Earth Day snack. Each Kroger Chef Jr. is a 30-minute class where your child receives an apron, patch, chef's hat, recipe card, holder, and a whisk for only $7 per child. Register for your time today at KrogerChefJr.com. So let's go inside the clubhouse a little bit. Here is Brian Snitker on the Big Bear and his performance on Sunday.
He's such a good hitter. I mean, when he gets going, those guys get hot. I mean, it's, you know, that thing is awful slow for him.
It's big. It's big because, you know, our objective is to win series. And you know, like I said, this was a tough fought game. And so it's big, you know, it's kind of, because we're going to a team, looks like they're starting to get hot too in the Astros. So, you know, this will be an interesting next 3 days also.
Look, I don't think there's any doubt at this point that Marcell Ozuna is the unquestioned MVP of the Braves. And I would say potentially the MVP of the league. It's not like the bats have gone silent for the Braves. Sure, there have been games where, you know, things haven't worked out or, you know, they didn't come up clutch in key situations. And sometimes those late game comebacks just don't happen. But when they do, it feels like Marcell Ozuna is right in the middle of it. Not just on Sunday against the Marlins, but when you need 2 home runs and the bats don't seem to be working, the Big Bear can provide you with that. If you want to put a game out of reach, Marcell Ozuna has done that twice this year with big flies late in games that basically put the game away. This dude is the heart and soul of this team. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah, Acuna's fantastic. Yeah, Austin Riley's a great leader. Marcell Ozuna keeps everything light in the clubhouse, and he is massive in the biggest situations possible. And it's not an aberration. It's every single time. And again, he does it in Miami, a place that kickstarted his season last year when he was 0 for about 750,000 throughout the course of the first month of the season. He came up big in Miami again. And it's all about staying calm in those clutch situations. And Marcell definitely does that.
It's like a do or die. So those kind of clutch moments is like a do or die. And if you get result, you get result. If you fail, you fail. So The only thing you have to worry is like I make a good contact. If you out, you out. This is a place that I grew up, and this is the team that gave me the opportunity as a professional baseball player, and I feel comfortable here. You know, and my family live here, so that's basically my hometown.
Let's talk a little bit about Charlie Morton, though, because I've kind of gone back and forth on Charlie Morton. You look at his three outings this year. He's gone the same distance, 5 2/3. All three games, 5 2/3. Have they been great games? No. The first game against the White Sox, that was solid. But 4 earned runs against the Mets and then 6 earned runs against Miami on Sunday. Is that a sign that he can't be effective? I wouldn't go that far. But the Braves need Charlie Morton to be able to hold leads. And Sunday's game against the Marlins, that felt like a blowout waiting to happen. And then for whatever reason, Morton just lost it. In that fifth inning, he was not hitting his spots at all. And that's kind of it's basically the second straight outing. The first outing was fantastic. But it's the second straight outing where you start to see things go off the rails. And maybe Snit makes the right call at the right time, but maybe not. Maybe he sticks with the veteran too much. And that's exactly what happened. And I'm not blaming Snit. I think that Morton has earned enough street cred to earn the right to try to work through problems, especially in a game that, you know, the Braves were up 4 at that point. He deserves the opportunity to work through those problems. I question if those problems are going to continue. Can he continue, if he can continue to earn that rope, if he has that big of a leash? We don't expect a lot from Charlie Morton. In fact, I would say if Morton finishes the season just over 4-2 from an ERA perspective, that's fine. Even 4-5, I'd be fine with that. His career in the regular season, he's 4-0-1 from an ERA perspective. That would be, I think, a bonus for Charlie Morton this year. Because I don't think the Braves are going to need him to go out there and be Greg Maddux. They're not going to need him to be what Spencer Strider used to be. They're not going to need him to be what Max Fried should be. They need him to be effective. And a 5.29 ERA, especially with what happened against a Marlins team that is, I think scuffling would be a nice way to describe that Marlins team. I think the other way would be god-awful Marlins team, because that's pretty much where they are. So I think it is time to be a little concerned. And look, I might have been more concerned than others going in. And maybe it was the false hope of the White Sox game in his first start. But to me, I'm always kind of pins and needles with Charlie Morton. Like, okay, when's the 3-run homer going to come? And is it going to make or break the game? And it almost broke the game today. And that's just my feeling when I watch Charlie Morton take the mound. I hope he proves me otherwise. I think he can prove me otherwise. I think he's still got that ability. But you can't let this happen against a Marlins team. With that said, he still got the job done. Still saved the bullpen a little bit. And all in all, he didn't let the game get sideways. And that, I guess, if you're looking for a silver lining with his performance, I guess that is it. Here's Brian Snicker after Sunday's game talking a little bit about his starter, Charlie Morton.
It was good. You know, just a couple of times there. Overall, it was all right. But, you know, just couldn't finish it off. But you know what? Still, we were tied right there. And that's, you know, so...
All right, let's spin it back a couple days. We're not going to talk about Saturday because Saturday just wipe it off the map. A loss to the Marlins is embarrassing. We're not going to talk about it. But What we will talk about is Max Fried. Friday night, he built off of those four innings from the previous start. Remember, he got blown up in the first and then got to the fifth. He built off that. I was wondering, okay, is Max Fried the guy who gets lit up consistently in the first inning? Is he going to be Tom Glavine, who was notorious for not being ready in the first inning? Or is he going to right the ship, figure things out? I think it's clear he righted the ship. 6 1/3, one earned run, 84 pitches. And honestly, that pitch count got inflated in that sixth inning and late in the fifth, because he was on the way to a Maddox complete game under 90 pitches. Like he was on his way to a Maddox. And it was just so encouraging to see Max back the way that we all know that he can be, back to that guy who was the bulldog in Houston in game 6 of the World Series, back to that guy who we know could be, has been, and should be an ace, but not just an ace of this rotation now without Strider. To me, with Strider gone, and look, we all knew that Strider was going to have surgery last week. I didn't think the Braves would announce it until he had already had it, and that's exactly what happened. We just didn't know when that surgery was actually going to take place, but everybody knew it was happening, right? So Max had to go out there and prove that he's the guy. Max had to go out there and prove that he has what it takes to put a team on his shoulders, to put a pitching staff on his shoulders, and do not only what needs to be done, do what go over and above what anybody was expecting. And that's exactly what he did. And here is Max Fried talking a little bit about his performance from Friday night.
You know, I was working really well with Travis tonight. A big thing was just going back to who I am, and that's changing speeds, using both sides of the plate, and not worrying about results and just kind of attacking and working together and just kind of trying to feel comfortable and, you know, like myself, because those the last couple outings I haven't necessarily felt like that. So it was nice to go out there and give us a good chance to win. You know, it was a close game for a long time, and obviously the guys came through going into that, you know, into this or in that sixth inning. So, you know, really good one to build off of.
All right. There's a big question, though. It's a big question. What is up with Ronald Acuña Jr.? Is it time to worry about Ronald Acuña Jr.? He's got the 7 stolen bases. He's got the goose egg in the home run department. He's got the goose egg in the home run department. He only has 5 RBIs. Is it time to worry? My answer is kind of. And I know last episode I said no. Or maybe it was episode before last. I said no, it's not time to worry. I'm changing my tune a little bit in terms of the power department. Does he need to go 40-70 for the Braves to win the World Series? No. Does he need to hit 30? Probably. And so sitting there with no home runs on April 15th, it makes me wonder what is going on. Do I think it's the knee? No. Do I think he's maybe pressing a little bit? Yeah. 15 strikeouts is not something you want to see from Ronald Acuña Jr. That is suboptimal to a point where, look, he should be more, I think he should be more aggressive. And, you know, I think for Ronnie, what do we know about Ronnie? He jumps on you all the time. He ambushes pitches. That's why he has, I think, more leadoff home runs than any active player in baseball. That might not be accurate, but we're going to say it is just for the sake of this podcast. It doesn't feel like he's going after pitchers like that. It doesn't feel like he's got full-on attack mentality like he did last year and even in seasons past. Is that on purpose? I don't know. Does it need to change? Yeah, it does. Because we can't be sitting here 2.5 weeks into the season with our superstar not generating power. With that said, this is a guy who we've seen string him together, put a team on his back, and carry them to the promised land. We know he's capable of that. But it's odd, man. It is odd coming off the season he had last year and all the awards and accolades and everything that went on around it. It's odd to see him at the plate and not really consider him a long ball threat every single time. Like, I look at Ronald now and I love Ronald, right? I look at Ronald right now and think that, okay, he's probably going to get on base. He might strike out. And when he gets on base, he's going to steal a lot of bases and produce runs. I don't look at him and say, you better not miss because he'll put one 15 rows deep. I don't think like that now, which is, maybe it's me being sort of prisoner of the moment. But but to me, that's a sign that, yeah, it's time to start worrying a little bit. But got that short porch, got those Crawford boxes in Houston coming up. So things could change, and they could change in a hurry. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will preview that Astros series. Got a good friend, Dan Matthews. He was in Atlanta doing radio. Now he's on Sports Talk 790 in Houston. He is an unapologetic Astros fan, and he's now covering the Astros. Hey, that sounds like me, just on the other side. We'll talk to Dan next. From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this is the Braves Report, presented by Kroger.
When you're looking for leading cardiac treatment, look to Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with 5 emergency cardiac care centers, so we're here when you need us most. We lead with more than 55 locations in Georgia. That means we're always in the heart of your neighborhood. We lead with clarity, because clear direction is better when it comes to understanding every step of your treatment. Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with heart.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over 4 decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Joined now by a good friend, a guy who, if you're in Atlanta, you probably know and you probably miss, because I know that I do. Mr. Dan Matthews, now of Sports Talk 790 in Houston. He went to the other side, but we still like him and he's joining us now. Dan, what's going on, dude?
Dude, what's going on, buddy? It's been too long. It just means that we need to get even closer to SEC Media Days in Dallas. Now, here's the thing. Once we hit that time of the year, if you're in Dallas for it, which also, too, mind you, I'm going to go ahead and put a bug in the ear of the folks over at the AJC for you, is it would be a 2 birds with 1 stone trip for you. It would be not only SEC Media Days, but also All-Star Game Week right there at Globe Life Field in Arlington. So tons of Braves will be there, and you could be able to have tons of content for the AJC. So for the crew right there at Cox Media Group, go ahead and send Barrett. It's going to be well worth it.
Well, I tell you what, if that were to happen, it would require a sponsorship from some kind of energy drink, because I would need it. That would be all day, all night, and all evening long. But man, that would be fun. And okay, so let's switch gears. One thing that is fun now, and you mentioned it before we started recording, that this Astros team finally showed signs of life. They went 2 of 3 from the Rangers. Altuve homers twice on Sunday. Christian Javier looks like an ace, going 7 strong. What comes of this series win over the Rangers? Did they actually fix the glitch in Houston?
Well, I mean, the glitch would be runners in scoring position, because 2 of the most ugly series they've had this year, they went 8 for 41 against the Yankees in the very first weekend of the season. And then this past week, I think it was pretty similar in terms of just the inability to knock runners in from scoring position against the Royals when they got swept. And then on Friday night, I think what was kind of interesting is there was a little bit of a turning point in the game where earlier in the game, the Rangers had, I believe it was Dane Dunning, had skipped a pitch and it hit Yordan Alvarez in the calf. And it's like, okay, pitch gets away from you, fine, whatever. Well, the Rangers were up at the time 12-2 on Friday night in the seventh inning, and they hit Yordan Alvarez again. And the Astros had straight up said, we don't like that. And they erupted for five runs in that inning. And I think if nothing else, Astros fans were kind of like, guys, like, show us something. Like, you know, it's one thing to lose. It's April. It's fine. I get it. But it's also, too, Friday night was the third straight game that their opponent scored at least 10 runs on them. So starting pitching was not there. And then, you know, by the time that you even get to the bullpen, the game's over. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not only that, it was also too of, you know, let's see something from the offense. And granted, all weekend long they were without Alex Bregman. And also too, for much of the weekend until Sunday, Chaz McCormick was out as well with a hamstring issue. But, you know, I think that more than anything, Astros fans were just kind of looking for, hey, show us a proof of life here. Like, you know, are you guys going to get back into this thing? Or, you know, is the month of April going to get so far away from you guys that it's going to be tough? But even going into this series, they were only 4.5 games back of the Rangers. Now, we don't look at standings until Memorial Day.
Correct.
But after winning those two games, I mean, you know, they're only 2.5 games back and, you know, kind of, you know, just the somewhat being able to scratch the itch of scoring runners from scoring position, at least in the last couple of games, that at least got people excited around here again.
Not looking at the standings until Memorial Day. It's almost like we both have hung around a guest who has been on this show before, and that is John Kincaid, because he says that after every single Braves loss, or used to say that after every Braves loss.
I was going to say, I think as a matter of fact, when Kincaid used to do CBS Sports Radio in Atlanta, that's where I got it from, because I think Mraz was like talking about, oh, the Yankees are here. He's like, ah, don't worry about it till Memorial Day. So I think great minds think alike there.
Well, and the Braves proved that in 2021. I would say let's not worry about anything, especially in this day and age where everybody makes the postseason in Major League Baseball. So let's stay with last weekend and just kind of where the standings are right now for the Astros. For those of us, you know, and you've been here, you know how things are around here. We sort of sit in our Braves bubble and in our NL East bubble. What does the Rangers-Astros rivalry, what's that like? Does it even matter? Because I honestly don't even know. Does it matter?
No, it definitely does now. I mean, especially, you know, after the ALCS last year, I think it took it up a notch. And also, too, I mean, I think that probably just because of the Astros' dominance in the series for the longest time, Astros fans didn't necessarily, you know, take it all that seriously just because it was like, all right, cute. You know, the Rangers beat us a couple of times, whatever. It means more to them than it means to us. But I think, you know, just the fact that they both played each other for a chance to go to the World Series last year. And also, too, you know, the Rangers are still really good and they're still going to be very good. And, you know, I think that probably the division race that we saw last year, where coming down to last weekend, it was the Astros, it was the Rangers, it was the Seattle Mariners, that we're probably looking at a similar race again this year. I mean, because Texas has a hell of a lineup, even without Nathaniel Lowe in the lineup right now for them. I mean, you know, they're still able to put together really good at-bats and they're still able to put up a lot of runs. And oh, by the way, they're still going to get a lot of really good pitching back. I mean, Max Scherzer, whatever he has left, Jacob deGrom, whatever he has, you know, and we haven't even seen Jack Leiter yet. I mean, if he's going to come up, I mean, we've already seen Wyatt Langford come up this year for them. So it's going to be a tightly contested race, you know, all the way into September and in the early stages of October for whoever's going to win this AL West. So I would say that the rivalry is kind of jumped up a little bit more. I mean, just from the fact of, you know, what happened last year. I mean, because I think the wake-up call for the Astros fans was, number one, this team could not win at home last year. This year, funny enough, they're winning at home. They're not winning necessarily on the road, unless it's Globe Life Field, which has been almost Minute Maid Park North for the Astros the last few years. But, you know, you come home, you take two of three, and all of a sudden, I think there's kind of a new lease on life here in the early going of the season. Although, as one of our co-hosts reminded me today, he goes, this is a team that's been to the ALCS seven straight years. So if they're having a little bit of a slow start in April, which they have had, don't freak out yet, because that's not what what wins this thing.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And certainly the Astros know how to win. And one big thing I think for fans out there, you know, it kind of sort of gets lost in everything, but the Astros are missing two really key pieces of the starting rotation. And I mean, you would know better than I, but it sounds like Verlander's close and Valdez is not as close, but coming back soon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. We've called them the Codify Five because Codify on Twitter throwing out the headshots of not only Verlander and Fromber, as you just mentioned, but Jose Urquidy, a guy that's been a real key part. I mean, Braves fans remember him from the 2021 World Series where he won Game 2 against them at Minute Maid Park as part of that series. And also, too, Lance McCullers Jr., and Luis Garcia. I mean, you know, Braves fans remember Luis Garcia, obviously, for Jorge Soler. But, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, coming into the season, Dana Brown, who, of course, Braves fans will remember from being the director of scouting for Alex Anthopoulos there in Atlanta, now the Astros GM, he was talking about just really liking the depth of this pitching staff. But the funny thing is about depth is it's a nice luxury to have, but you don't really want to use it. And in this case right here, the Astros here in the early going have had to use it. They knew pretty much coming out of spring training, even before finishing up spring training out in West Palm Beach, that Justin Verlander was not going to be ready for opening day. So that's one. And then also, two, right before spring training ended, you had Jose Urquidy have a forearm flare-up. And as Braves fans have just seen with Spencer Strider, that's a thing that you don't want to see happen, because with a pitcher, you know, if it's a shoulder, hey, a little bit of shoulder inflammation, all right, give them a week or two, they're fine. But if it's an elbow or a forearm, you're kind of like, uh-oh, is it that? And they had a little bit of a scare this week with Fromber as well, with, you know, a little bit of inflammation in his elbow. But it sounded like it was the top of the elbow, which is, you know, from people I've talked with in terms of, you know, UCL concerns. It's not necessarily UCL concern. It's more of muscular. He did talk with the media on Sunday and said that should play catch on Tuesday. And then thinks by the time he's eligible to come off the IL, he should be ready to go. So it's obviously going to be after this series. But still, I mean, you know, you're really having to rely on guys that probably at this point they did not necessarily want to rely upon. And one of them is a guy you're going to see this series and their top pitching prospect, Spencer Arrighetti.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to get. Finally, we do get Darius Vines versus Spencer Arrighetti, which is, I mean, from a matchup perspective, I don't think either one of us thought we'd get this matchup on April 15th, right? That is not right. One we expected. And, you know, moving forward in the series, Ronaldo Lopez, who's been great for the Braves in his couple of starts versus Hunter Brown, and then Max Fried, who, you know, finally had, you know, his game that we expected against the Marlins on Friday. He's going up against JP France. When Braves fans see those three pitchers, Spencer Arrighetti, Hunter Brown, and JP France, kind of break down each one of them. What are their strengths, weaknesses, and sort of how do you project how they will handle this Braves lineup?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the key is with Arrighetti and with Brown is, are they spotting their fastball, which is pretty much, you know, the same with any pitcher in Major League Baseball. But for young guys like them who have such an electric fastball, I mean, they're both mid to high 90s guys. You know, it's just a key of how are they working off of that fastball if they're able to find the zone. I mean, I think the problem with Brown has been to this point, has been command. He has not necessarily been able to command the zone. And when he has, he's found barrels. You know, the second start of the season that he had after a pretty decent one against the Yankees, the first start that he had of the year on that Saturday. But, you know, the Yankees just did such a great job of kind of like, remember years ago when the Braves played against Cleveland when Trevor Bauer was there and Bauer complained about all the pitches they fouled off and just how they worked counts and did all these things, which hitters are supposed
Bauer
to do.
Complained.
Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't sound like him whatsoever, right? Yeah, that's not his MO. But But that's what it was. And, you know, Eric Gedde, you know, he got thrust into action last week. I mean, I think that probably most of us, if you were able to put this thing on paper, Spencer Eric Gedde would not have been heard from in an Astros uniform until about June or July. But, you know, he's somebody that they're very high on, and he's got, you know, electric stuff. It's just the problem is, you know, he found out that pitching in Major League Baseball is a little bit different than pitching in the minor leagues. And, you know, I was doing the Astros 10th inning show as part of our flagship the other night, and we had a chance to hear from Eric Gedde after that start against the Royals. And, I mean, you almost sounded like you were hearing from a guy that was like, oh, this is different. Like, you know, you can't get away with pitches that I got away with in Sugarland up here. And, you know, that's kind of what he ran into in that third inning, got away from him up in Kansas City. So, you know, those two guys, I mean, that's probably the wild card of it all. And then, you know, JP France has been really, I think, a lot of the same mold of like a Jose Urquidy. His stuff is okay. It's not great, but he throws strikes and he gets you innings. And that's something that absolutely you need in a pitching staff. And the last time out, you know, the problem was the command was not there in that third inning against the Rangers, and they tattooed him for 7 runs in that third inning. But the problem was you were coming off of Spencer Arrighetti only going 3 innings. You were coming off of Hunter Brown not even being able to get out of the first inning against Kansas City, and you had to use a lot of your long relief guys at that point. I mean, I think today was the first time that Seth Martinez had pitched since I believe Wednesday was the last time he pitched after he had to come in and throw a long relief outing against the Rangers because Blair Henley, who they had called up to spot start for Framber Valdez last Monday night, couldn't even get more than one out in that game. And the Astros had to really stretch that bullpen as best as possible. And luckily they won 10-5. So I think, you know, it's going to be a tough matchup because, I mean, this is a Braves lineup that 1-9, there's no soft outs.
No.
I mean, everybody that's there, and even, you know, days like today in the finale you guys had against the Marlins, I mean, you know, you get a, an Adam Duvall coming off the bench. I mean, that's a hell of a bat coming off the bench. And it's going to be a tough series. I mean, you know, and it kind of rounds out the string of tough series that the Astros have had, where at the end of the week, you know, they're looking at the Washington Nationals and saying, oh, thank God, you know, we're not facing the Yankees, who will probably be in the postseason. We're not facing the Blue Jays, who will probably be in the postseason. We're not facing the Rangers. And also, too, I mean, the Royals look like a team that has a really good chance to win the AL Central. So it's been a tough stretch here out of the gate for the Astros. This kind of at least gets them into a softer part of the schedule after these 3 games. But these 3 games are going to be tough at Minute Maid Park.
There's no doubt. And luckily for Astros fans, Jorge Soler is not going to be there.
That's true.
That will be helpful.
Until they face the Giants. And the good news is, too, is they mostly have the roof closed now. So the apartments across the street from Minute Maid Park don't need to worry about Jorge Soler parking one on someone's lanai right there.
God, what a day that was. That was when you were still a Braves guy, even though you won't admit.
Yeah.
That was when you were still a Braves guy.
You know, the funny thing is like going into that series, I was like, this is so awesome. Like this is my ideal. But professionally, yes, it was awesome. It was amazing. And even a little bit, personally, too, just because I was so happy to see, you know, so many people be so happy again, because, I mean, I lived through 28-3. I lived through year previous when Cody Bellinger hit that home run. And it's just like, damn it, yet again. And why them? Like why the Dodgers? Like, you know, they don't need anything nice in L.A. Like, why them? It's things that World Series will be one as long as I'm in this business, I will never forget. And I'll never forget, you know, with being with 680 The Fan, taking that right from the Cobb Galleria where we were as a staging area in the 680 The Fan van, taking a right on the Cobb Parkway. And it seriously was like a scene in a movie, like where you finally saw Neverland, like where it's just walls of Braves fans lining Cobb Parkway going towards the Battery. And it was just like, wow, this means
it was
a lot.
Awesome.
And it was absolutely amazing.
Let me tell you something about when you were still here that I know you remember this, but the COVID year 680 The Fan had watch parties in the Battery at Sport and Social when the three-game wild card series, or the three-game Braves 1 and 2 wild card series was taking place in the stadium in front of nobody. And the Chipper Jones 1-0 walk-off when Trevor Bauer did the tomahawk chop walking off the mound, you and I in extra innings were like literally had to be in a corner to watch the actual live feed on the little baseball TV because it was like actual real time, not 5 seconds behind. And I can't even tell you how many times we walked past each other, but not just pacing. There was no one around. It was just me and you in a corner. We're just walking around in circles like, God dang, can we just finish this thing off, please?
No, I remember it too. I mean, you know, just where finally, I can't remember who, it was a line drive to center field.
It was Freddie. It was Freddie.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Freddie. And then the next day, I remembered it was a close game. And then all of a sudden, they just blew the top off where Ozuna hit the home run and did the selfie.
That's right.
Right before he got to first base. And then, of course, they went to Houston, beat Miami. And that whole playoff run.
And let's end the story there. let's end the Braves season right there.
Well, I mean, you know, because that was also, too, where it was me, it was Brian Hoyt, and also Frank Duffy of Duffy Realty, where we took an RV and went to Arlington. And we went to game 3, which was awful. And then we went to game 4, which was Bryce Wilson pitching.
That was the Bryce Wilson game. Yep.
That's right. And also Marcelo Zuna was unreal in that game, 2 home runs. And, you know, I just remembered, you know, I think if nothing else, that kind of gave rise, like, you know, I talked about it on my show on Saturday with, you know, the way that the Astros lost the game on Friday. I said, sometimes you can lose, but then win later on because of that effort. And I feel like that series for the Braves kind of gave them life for 2021, where it was, all right, if we get here, we know we can be okay. And they did. And, I mean, I still, even though, like, you know, I'm no longer in Braves country, I still will watch that 7th inning of game 6 of the NLCS where Tyler Matzek came in, because it still fires me up.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. I mean, and his reaction coming off the mound, that the fist pump. I mean, you know, also to people, you know, oh, Atlanta, you know, they're not great fans. I'm like, yes. Yeah. Dude, yeah. I mean, the Battery, Truist Park.
It's just a sterile shopping mall. It's just a sterile shopping mall.
Oh, of course. I mean, certain columnists in Los
certain
Angeles
columnists in Los Angeles say that. Yeah.
Right, right. But if they were being honest, they would have been like, that atmosphere was awesome. Like,
it was unreal.
That 2021 was amazing.
It was awesome. It was awesome. I'm glad you were here for that, and I'm glad you're doing well over in Houston and back covering the team that you love, which is ironically what I do too. But thank you for hopping on Braves Report, Dan. Really appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate it, buddy. Always great to catch up with you.
That'll do it for this edition of the Braves Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Appreciate you guys checking out the show. Please, if you have not subscribed, reviewed, given us stars, please consider doing that. Leave a review. Let us know what you like. And honestly, let us know what you dislike. I would love to know what you think we can do better here on the Braves Report and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Let's get some wins out there in Houston. We will talk to you guys on Wednesday.
When you're looking for leading cardiac treatment, look to Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with 5 emergency cardiac care centers, so we're here when you need us most. We lead with more than 55 locations in Georgia. That means we're always in the heart of your neighborhood. We lead with clarity, because clear direction is better when it comes to understanding every step of your treatment. Northside Hospital Heart Institute. We lead with heart.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut, are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.